Oh, I love Tenacious D.
Okay, so all of my humor is fine, right?
Well, yeah.
If you listen, if you know the words to Kielbasa, we're fine. Are you rolling?
I am now rolling, so
we're talking about Tenacious D Kielbasa.
After we're done with the podcast, we can have a Tenacious D discussion.
I love finding out how far your line is before you start to blush. It's fantastic. You lived in Utah too long. It's great.
Utah. I moved out of Utah.
Let's just be clear. But you still got a little Utah in you.
I do.
In you. Hit the thing and we'll do a show.
All right, let's do that.
Let's do a show.
You do the run-up.
The run-up? Look at you. Using all kinds of...
I know.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another episode of The Schemate with Rich and Terrence, where we talk about things that are happening in the reef-keeping world. Today, we're going to talk about things that are happening in the reef-keeping world. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 8.
Of Schemate.
Schemate.
Oh, no.
I'd like a pumpkin spice schemate.
Oh, that sounds really
gross.
How
are you doing, Terrence?
I'm doing great. Doing great, man.
It's been 2 weeks.
And you've come back to my house.
Yeah, it was incredible. The traffic was much less of a pain tonight.
Awesome. Glad to hear that and glad to see that you've got one outfit.
I do. I wear the same outfit every time we're together. Unless you have free shirts and I haven't changed.
No, that's part of my job. It's funny, you know, giveaways in your job kind of thing, right? In the marketing world. My son, up until the age of 8, thought my job was going places and giving away screaming flying monkeys because that was like our key giveaway for the company I was working. So I'd come home and be like, Dad, did you give away a lot of monkeys this time?
Yeah. That's great. When I was doing trade shows professionally, it was like, what are your giveaways?
Oh, yeah.
If you don't, okay, we're going to go buy giveaways if you don't have any giveaways because people don't care.
Were you doing free juggling?
Yeah, I did it for like 15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of trade shows.
Yeah, we had a magician one time at one of our things. Not for Neptune, but for something else.
I like that we billboarded this whole thing about reef keeping. It's 2 minutes. We haven't said a damn thing.
Okay.
A damn thing.
Yes.
So we like to, at the beginning, what's going on with you? So I had a water delivery at my house this week. Bob Halem Sea Pure Water.
Okay.
He gets water from Half Moon Bay, filters it 10 times or something like that. And that's the water I use.
Does he just like drive up to the dock and put a hose into the ocean?
Yes.
Really?
No, I don't know where he gets it from. I don't think he goes on a boat, but I think he uses a dock that's far out.
That's not a concern to you at all.
Not a concern to me at all.
Wow.
Not at all. You know why? Because it's about 10 cents a gallon more than it would cost me to make my own salt.
Right.
And I don't have to lug boxes of salt around. I don't have to mix salt. I don't have to prepare water, fresh water. I don't have to do anything.
How does he filter it, though? I mean, if there's heavy metals and other things in there.
That you're not filtering out. He's just filtering out organics.
Because, I mean, that's what I'd be thinking about in the oceans of California.
Nah, I'm not worried at all.
Fukushima.
No, yeah, I'm super not worried about that. So he drives up to my house.
Light you up.
Oh, yeah, right. You know, you're just trying to poke at me. He drives up with a 1,000-gallon tank on the back of a truck, and he runs a line out to my reservoir, and 15 minutes later, I have 500 gallons of water, and he goes away. It's great.
And you have that outdoor reservoir too, right?
Yeah, that outdoor reservoir, and then I fill the under-the-house reservoir from that every 200 gallons, and it looks like I'm changing about 100 gallons a month in the auto water changes in my tank.
And you say it's only 10 cents a gallon
It's
more.
Like 10 or 15 cents more than if I was making up my own salt, which you have to include everything, right? So it's the cost of the salt plus the cost
of
to make
the water. Right.
And then the time it takes to make it.
Okay.
You have to put, actually, if you put the time it takes to make it.
Whose time? What are you talking
my
about?
My time.
To actually mix the salt water?
To mix the salt water and do that and make sure it's right. And you have to cut open the bags and deal with all that stuff, which after last episode, we talked about how you're a prima donna. Yeah. I'm such a prima donna. It is so much, but it's kind of your company's fault. I like to press a button and things happen.
I get my salt water delivered.
It's great. It's the best. I highly recommend it if you can get trustable salt water. Now, I didn't just go, hello, Yellow Pages. Who makes salt water? It's, you know, this is the same guy who supplies salt water to most of the stores in Northern California.
Really?
Yeah. So
Robert gets his water.
I don't know. I haven't been to Roberts in a long time because it's just
too far. We don't have
that
many stores, so you know.
So
that,
I know
right?
Quite a collection.
That's one,
right?
Yes.
I can't believe that Robert is mixing his own salt. It's just too labor intensive when you could just buy.
He's very
Bob.
Particular. And Robert, we're speaking about right now, is
Neptune Aquatics
in San Jose. Easily, in my book, one of the top five local fish stores in the country.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
No argument from Rich. That's awesome.
If it was local to me, it would be much better, but it's not. So I don't go there that often.
Move.
So no, Bob knows where to bring salt to my house.
I hear you.
So
hear
if
you.
So it's
but 1,000 gallons.
Proven.
That's all he puts on the truck, or how much goes on the truck?
I think the tank he did was 1,000 gallons.
No, but I mean, on his truck, it only holds 1,000.
I don't know. I think it's the new tanks.
All right, well, this is getting boring. So let's talk something else.
Getting boring? We're talking about water delivery.
Yeah, that's
which is the most awesome thing in the world. I would tell you if you switch to the system, if you for your system that's bigger than my system and didn't have, if you decided to have a real sized reservoir for your makeup water instead of a 100-gallon tank because you're silly, having a guy show up and go, here's your water, and then you don't have to do anything, it's freaking magical and wonderful. And okay. I never worry if there's a problem. I know I can do 200% water changes on my system.
And it's right to 35 PPT.
I never check. It's like 34.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hey, 34, 35.
Yeah, it's great. All right. So that's what's happening in my tank.
That's what's happening in your world in your tank.
Yeah, what's happening in yours?
My aquarium has been kind of having life in it for about 3 years now. And for 3 years, I have been heating my tank
with a propane torch.
Yeah, with two
propane torches,
two titanium heaters, and two of the glass Jaeger heaters, totaling I don't know about 1,200 watts, right?
Yeah,
and just crying every time I open my electric bill because I know the reason, especially through the winter, that my electric bill is so high, is because of all that electric heat and because of. At least one of the years, I didn't even cover the thing because I was super ultra lazy. and all the time, I knew that there is this way for me to use gas hot water that I have in the house already, which is way cheaper than electricity in California. California electricity for me is about 28 cents a kilowatt hour when it averages out the tiers or what have you. So it's easily twice as much as most of the rest of the country in terms of the cost of electricity. And the cost per therm or the cost per BTU created out of gas that I can get is, depending on how you look at it, maybe half. Okay.
Yeah.
And my house, the first time I've owned a house that has circulating hot water in it, which is really cool because you turn the tap on and other than what's in...
Oh, it's always circulating.
Yes.
So it's always hot.
Yeah.
You don't have to... Run a gallon out.
Right. So I'm doing that for the environment because you know how I am. And there's, you know, a foot and a half of water in your supply line under your sink. And then after that, it's all hot water, right? So you turn it on and literally in 14 seconds, you have super hot water in the house. And there's a pump in the garage. There's one big circuit that goes through your entire house. So I already had that in my house. So I'm super lazy because I didn't tap into that and put in a heat exchanger. So heat exchangers are nothing new to guys like you who've worked in public aquariums. They're used all the time for both hot and cold.
Yeah, a heat exchanger is a device that exchanges heat.
Yes. So basically you have one thing that comes through that is warm.
A thing that comes through that is warm.
It doesn't have to be water, but in this case it's water.
Yeah.
Okay. And it passes through a maze or a network of tubes that the other fluid that you want to get warm or cold.
Yeah, it could be used for either.
Correct. Passes around it, and then it transfers the heat inside that heat exchanger. It exchanges the heat.
So basically, it's just like a chiller coil, if you're familiar with what a drop-in chiller coil looks like. It's a titanium pipe.
Correct.
And in this case, you're running hot water through it, you're sometimes running hot water. You're
correct.
Controlling the temperature of the water that goes through there. If the tank is cold, hot water goes through that, and the heat from that water inside that titanium coil is imparted to your system.
Correct. And so in the case of mine, the way that we set it up is I've got a titanium heat exchanger. I bought it I believe off eBay. It was highly rated, and it's real titanium, and I feel pretty comfortable with it. I think it was $250, okay. I think, is what it was. Surprisingly, when I bought it, there was no reference to the size in it, so I was thinking it was this big old thing, right?
Yeah.
It comes, it's like 18 inches long,
yeah.
And I'm like,
how many coils? Is it tightly coiled or lightly
coiled? It's not a coil, actually. It's just a bunch of titanium pipes. So when the water comes in... from, I can't remember which one it goes through. I think it's the one from the tank comes in. It goes in all those little pipes and then goes out the other side. And then the whole vessel holds the hot water from the house.
Gotcha.
And surrounds all of those little pipes that go through there.
So you're actually pumping tank water through the exchanger.
Correct. Correct.
Rather than a coil, which would be sitting in there. So what I described before is not what's actually happening.
That's correct.
Excellent.
So there's multiple ways to do this. Mine basically has an input and an output for the tank water.
Just like Andy Griffith.
And an input and an output for the water from my house, the hot water. And then when my tank calls for heat, basically my Apex calls for heat and says, okay, the tank has gone down, it needs heat now. There's a valve on there that turns on. It's actually hooked up to the 24 volt on my Apex, and it opens that valve, and it lets the hot water in. Well, the circuit still needs to exist in order for everything to work in the house. So upstream and across those two pipes is another smaller pipe with a valve on it that you valve back. And so what this does is...
I'm nodding, by the way.
Yes. So when you turn off that valve, now no water is going through the heat exchanger, but it still needs to circulate back through the house. So now it takes the other path through the smaller pipe with the bypass, right?
Yeah.
And it worked... Oh, and then also the valve itself... Obviously, if you lose power and your valve was open, you don't really want it to stay open.
Correct.
Would be really bad. So the valve itself has an auto shutoff feature. It has an actual capacitor inside of it. So when the power releases, it senses that the power releases, and then the power that's stored in that capacitor shuts the valve for you.
It's an auto off.
Yeah. So it's an auto off valve.
Normally off.
Yes. Yeah. And
it has to be energized to be on, so if the power goes off, it closes.
Correct. It's not spring operated or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's actually done electrically still.
Yeah.
And so that's really neat. That cost me, I think, about $50 for that. And it doesn't have to be stainless or titanium because it's running the water on your house water and not the tank water.
Right.
It never touches the tank water. And so when it calls for the heat in my tank, I have, I think, on there right now a 0.4 differential between when it goes off and on. And so it will, and there's a little carryover, of course. So it will heat a half degree in my tank in 15 minutes.
Okay.
It's amazed me.
And so you had to do some plumbing under the house.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Brian from Tenji on his own, kind of freelancing, he got approval to come out and
cool.
And moonlight and help me out. And so he helped me hook up the plumbing under the house, and we got it all hooked up. And like I said, I was expecting the water to have to flow through there, I don't know, like maybe an hour or 30 minutes or something like that. When I can't believe it. Well, 600 gallons of water changed a half a degree in this 18-inch little pipe, okay?
Yeah, heat exchangers are very efficient.
It's amazing. So I'll really know the difference when I get my next power bill to compare to last year's power bill at the same time, and I'll report back.
I'm really interested in that because I knew that this was happening. I've known about these for a long time. And in my house, I was looking at them this week, and the nearest hot water is really far, and I don't have circulating. Mm-hmm. That's right. So I'd have to do something else. So I think to get it installed would be more expensive for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going, what are my heaters actually doing? So I look at the Apex, and I look at my heaters, and almost all of them are on EB832s, and they're all zero. They're all pulling 0 watts and costing me zero. And I go, what the hell is that about? And I look through and all my heaters are turned off. I turn them all off on the dashboard. There's one heater in the secret home lab that's plugged into a blue line because I haven't put the EB832 back there yet. It's plugged into a blue line. And I think that 300-watt heater...
At least until the end of December.
I think is on all the time. and that tank runs a degree colder than the rest of the system. But the rest of the system is totally fine. The sump, the tank in the lab, and the tank in the living room, the tank have got exactly the same trends.
Right.
The only thing that's different, the sump and the tank and the display tank are exactly the same. And the tank in the lab where the heater is about a degree colder everything else. So I was like, oh, well, I've done something very strange here that's working. I wonder how much heat I actually need.
Yeah, well, you're right now in the shoulder season, my friend.
Yeah, well, so. I turned on some of the other heaters. but at some point I went, oh, I don't need these. I'm turning them off.
Right, right.
But forgot to turn them back on. So I'm really interested to see how much you actually save. To see if it's worth it to me to do it.
I don't know about, like I said, I don't know about you because I don't know exactly how much, you know, how cold it gets where you are compared to where I am. Your stuff is under the house. I don't know if you cover stuff up or not. It's very difficult with the foam over the top of my tank. That's why I was lazy last time. But I suspect it's going to save me minimum $300 a month.
Yeah. Interesting. Because I also run, I don't have a heater in my sump right now. I heat all in the bodies of water where the animals are.
Oh, wow.
And just let carryover get down to the sump. So if the sump's a few degrees colder, I don't really care because the amount of turnover through my sump is so low that it's not a big deal.
It's all gonna come to equilibrium pretty fast anyway. So it doesn't matter from that perspective.
How fun.
The only reason to have the heaters, you know, it's actually better the way you have it is because if you do have a shutdown in the power,
that's exactly right.
Then you'll still be heating the animal section.
That's the whole reason it was done that way.
The wrong way I'm doing it.
Yeah, everything about your system is pretty much wrong. pretty much.
Except for those corals, buddy, right?
How many gallons take a look at those, is the system?
Take a look at those growing out of the water and drool.
Okay? I can't. Why would I drool? They're nice. Well, how many gallons is your system?
The total system is about 600.
It's very good then that you have like a 50-gallon makeup water reservoir.
Oh, it's 100.
it's 100. Okay, that's fine. But you can only use 50 at a time. How much fresh water do you have on
100?
Site? 100. You have 300 gallons?
Oh, I have 100 and 100. I have 200 gallons of water available. So if I need to turn my RODI into salt water really quick, I can do it in about a half an hour.
Okay.
So there right. you go.
Okay. If that's what you really think is the best for your animals, then I'm okay.
No, I'm just going to call
that.
A guy.
You're just going to call a guy? Deliver me some water, boy.
Right.
Hurry it up.
Okay.
All right. We got a note from Ian Bell who says, I really enjoy the show.
Who is that? Do you know who this person is?
Ass. I really enjoy the show! !!
Wow.
I was wondering if you could talk about ORP. It's something I don't understand well enough and would like to know more about it. Cheers from Canada, eh?
Oh, another out-of-the-country person.
Hey,
huh?
Eh?
Hey, yeah.
Hey, buddy.
A hoser.
I'm not your buddy, guy.
A hoser.
Hoser. You went all the way to Bob and Doug. Wow. I just go to South
Park McKenzie's.
All right, so you know stuff about ORP.
You look a little like him.
I look like Rick Moranis.
Yes, you do.
Yeah. I have the thing I think about ORP, which is probably pretty short, so why don't you do your ORP dance? What do you think?
So
tell me about ORP.
ORP is one of those things that you almost never need until you do. And by that I mean...
Like love. Friendship.
Like Barney Fife.
Andy needed him a lot.
So basically, ORP or ORP is oxidation reduction potential. And without trying to be Randy Holmes Farley here, which there's no way I could even get close to.
There's no reason to.
The pedestrian way I explain it to people is that within your aquarium at all times, there are, if you think of Spy versus Spy in Mad Magazine, right? You had the...
You're so top. You're so timely.
I know.
Yeah.
I folded the back cover too. So the white spy and the black spy, right? And they're always fighting each other and they never kill each other. It's Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner, right?
Okay.
And so if your aquarium is doing really well, the things that are oxidizing in the aquarium and the things that are basically the, for all intents and purposes, the pollutants, and again, I'm very making this super pedestrian.
Okay.
They're in balance, right? Because if you had too much oxidizers in your tank, you would kill the fish, you would kill everything. It's like pouring bleach in your tank. Right?
Right.
And if it was the other way around, then you would have other bad things happening in your aquarium, right? You have extra nutrients and pollution in your aquarium, right?
I'll take your word for it.
So under normal circumstances, your tank basically sits at a particular ORP that is healthy, and it goes up and down a little bit during the day, but there's a kind of healthy cycle to what's happening. And most time you pay zero attention to it. But once in a while, something happens in your tank, and you want to know about it because maybe you're just curious to know why it did it, or maybe it's something bad is happening. Okay, as an example, if you were to take, have grandma feed your tank, and grandma decided that the fish needed, you know, the whole thing in my freezer of food because they need to be really happy.
Yeah,
you would get an ORP alarm on if you were running an ORP probe and a controller of some sort. You get an ORP alarm saying your ORP is crashing because there's not enough oxidizers to take care of that gunk going into your aquarium.
Okay.
Okay.
If
your clams are spawning in your tank, or your shrimp are spawning in the tank, or other things like that are happening, you will often get an incredible drop in your ORP. Many other times you'll get drops and you have no idea why it's happening. You can often see filter sock degradation happening through the ORP. So you can see over time what's happening with that. There's many other things that are maintenance-related things in the tank that you can see through the ORP.
I never see any correlation with the ORP changing.
Okay.
On my systems. Coral spawning, no change in ORP. Feed, and you've seen how much I feed, the ORP doesn't change at all. I mean, it changes just cyclically, right? So normally it's 349. I'm looking at it right now. 349 to 343. 350, the low is 330. So I've got the cyclic thing.
What are the big dips there?
Those big dips are the weird things that happen at night. This one happened at 1:30. This one happened at 12:30. It moves around. Sometimes it happens at 4. We don't know what those dips are.
Okay.
Those big sudden drops.
Right.
Yeah, there's something weird going on that we haven't been able to figure out.
Right.
We think it's probably some kind of interference.
It's possible it's electrical interference. That is one thing that can happen. So when it's an electrical device. I mean.
Yeah, when you say that you can see a difference, like with socks, how much of a change in ORP are we actually seeing?
Well, since it's cyclical, what will happen is you'll see that cycle come down.
You'll see it drift down.
Yeah, you'll see that cycle drift down, and you'll see it drift down, you know, maybe 50, right, millivolt. You'll see it come down 50 millivolt over, say, 7 days,
okay,
right? It's enough
so
that you'll see
the
trend.
Trend down.
You'll see the trend happen down. And, you know, for some people, they use it for that reason.
Okay.
Other people only have it on board to know when something really bad has happened. You can see things like, oh, my pump, you know, again, if you didn't have power monitoring on, right, and you have your pump for filtration and other things happening and, you know, into your skimmer, it goes off, your main return pump, and you have your ORP probe in the main display, for instance, like mine is. Mine's actually in the back of my main overflow. You will see a change in ORP, absolutely.
I don't. So I'm going to have to think about this a little bit more. I'd like to see, that's why, of course, I'm always going, let's codify this a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So like we were talking last episode, I don't need a scientific, rigorous paper, but I would sure love to see, here's the ORP trending down.
So here's ORP trending down.
There it is.
I don't know exactly why this is, but I'm going to assume that there is more nutrients in my aquarium right now over the last 7 days than before. I don't have a filter sock on there right now, so that's not necessarily it.
Mm.
It could also be my skimmer right now. It's likely I've been 2 weeks since I even cleaned the skimmer neck and the crap out of my skimmer. There's many of these kinds of things that it could possibly be. I don't know. I don't necessarily look at ORP for that reason, but I do have alarms. So mine generally sits around in the low 500s, which is really bizarre. There could be even an issue with the ORP probe that I have, but it still works.
Yeah.
I don't really care because I'm looking at the trend. And but that said, if I get an ORP level of 300 on my tank, I get an alert, and I want to know, is this something that was caused by somebody or something?
It's interesting. All right, because I've run ORP probes on several systems, and I never see any information that feels actionable. So I'm interested. I want to I just want to say that this hobby has become so freaking awesome because we both just pulled up our trends for ORP to see what's happening, and we're kind of just looking at them in real time as we're talking.
You want to see this really low area right here is probably because of the feeding, that heavy feeding I just did when you were here.
Yeah,
I'm pretty certain that because it is a stronger downward trend, and I fed really heavily right then. And Yeah. So.
Yeah. I'd like to know how much that dropped. How much did that drop, do you think?
Over probably where the normal was, probably about 5, 6, 8 on mine.
Oh,
10.
So very small. Okay.
Yeah, on mine.
Okay.
But again, my system is different. I mean, some people's systems, you can see much bigger drops for food. I think it's because of the way that their filtration system works.
Yeah.
And how much more oxidizers are introduced all the time in their system.
Yeah. And are you running ozone? And how often?
Are you running ozone or UV or these kinds of
and
things?
And I'll bet you I've fallen prey also on my graph. These big spikes are making it impossible to actually read the trend.
Right, and you can look at a day too. Yeah, it's definitely those big dips are definitely going to throw off your stuff. But I mean,
they're not going to throw off. They're going to throw off your ability
scale,
to
because of scale.
Your scaling. Right. Cool. All right. So my thing about ORP, what I would say is, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
it's a thing.
Is it the most important thing? Absolutely not. It's far down on the list in terms of keeping an aquarium with monitoring. You know, I think temperature, right? pH, not for things that are happening in short term, but things that are happening longer term. Definitely, and salinity, right? We're way up above the ORP level.
Yeah.
However, I would have a device that measures it because it's just another piece of information I can use.
Yeah,
why
I don't
not?
Mind the information. And the probes used to be not so reliable. I'm pretty sure they've gotten better.
I think the probes have gotten better, and also for the longest time, people weren't using ORP. People were using ORP not in a trending sense. They were using it like, what's your ORP? Oh,
yeah.
Is it 300? Oh, that's not good. And that's there's
that
nothing.
Doesn't tell you anything.
Doesn't tell you anything at all.
Yeah. So ORP has always had the potential to be really useful and really cool. For me, it's never really...
It hasn't paid off yet.
Paid off in any way. I also don't run a filter sock.
Right.
You know, and probably the way my brain works, something dropping, you know, 8 out of 350 would make me just ignore it.
I think that, I think that it has to do with maturation of a system, the filtration, how many more oxidizers are created in your system to balance stuff out, how fast that happens in your own system, as opposed to, say, running a BioCube, right? You're running a BioCube with very slow filtration through it, no skimmer, no other things happening, and then somebody dumps in a bunch of food, which in comparison to the water volume is, you know, huge. Yeah. You're going to see things much more dramatically.
Well, I'm going to look on a day scale.
Okay.
And I'm going to feed tomorrow and see if I see anything, which would be cool.
Yeah. And if you have it in the display, you know.
It's in the overflow of
If it's in the overflow and, you know, that's. I mean, maybe throw it in the display because your overflow is not getting in because you turn your pumps off also when you feed. Oh, you don't. Okay.
No,
okay. Good. But I mean, you could do some experiments and see.
Or rabbit.
Yeah, you can. I mean, you could turn off the flow and put it in the water
and see. Force it up.
Yeah, force it down. Force it
down. Yeah, down.
And see. Oh yeah. And here's what it does because it can be your system is so awesome, right? That it's like, oh, this is just a blip for me. I don't really care.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So I hope that's enough, Ian.
And you don't. Oh, the one other thing is calibration. Okay. So a lot of people ask about calibrating ORP probes. Again, if you're using it in the way that I'm just describing, it really doesn't matter because you're looking at trends anyway, and you're looking to find out what your tank is. Now, if you're using ozone, especially if you're using a very powerful ozone generator, you're absolutely going to want to use the ORP reading with it. And again, if you set that at a very safe level, if you're off 10% in your ORP and you have it set to a safe level, you're not going to have a problem either. Yeah. If you want to have a really exact, like high, ORP and high amount of ozone delivered to your tank, then yes, you can calibrate the ORP probe, but the chemicals to do it are kind of nasty. And
you should really question why are you pumping so much ozone into your tank?
Yeah, then there's that.
You're asking for problems.
Absolutely. So there you go.
That's cool. That's great. Okay, thank you very much, Ian. If you've got questions, send them to us, and we will try to get to them when we can.
Be like Ian.
Be like Ian. So in the next section that we have, both of them are mine.
Okay.
So pick one. I can do both of them, or pick I can one. Do one, and you can think of another one.
The more fun one is lanthanum cures ick.
Lanthanum cures ick.
That's the more fun one.
So there's a thread that I saw today that said lanthanum chloride cures ick.
So first tell them what lanthanum chloride is.
Lanthanum chloride is a metal that we have been using to bind and remove phosphates from our aquariums. It's been used in public aquariums for a long time, and in the last 5 or so years, it's become more popular for hobbyists. I've been using it at home.
What was that, Rich?
That was a hiccup.
You know, there's a dump button on here. You could just kind of like, you know.
I want the people.
Really
I don't want to lie to the people.
The visual was even better.
I don't want to lie to
audio.
The people. I want them to get the pure, unadulterated, unfiltered us.
So lanthanum is kind of like a flocculant, more or less, for phosphate, right? It binds with the phosphate, and then you're able to filter out.
Then you have to filter it out, which is the pain in the ass.
Okay.
Because it's small. It's like 10 microns. I've been doing it very low dosage. Someone's going to ask me what that is. So what am I doing? 30 mil a day of a solution that I make that is 30 mil of lanthanum chloride into 3 liters of distilled water.
Yeah, I'm not going to follow that. So that's fine. Okay, so.
Yeah, I know. It's
so,
numbers.
But
that's dosing into my skimmer where the skimmer is removing it.
And there's a bunch of different brands that make this, and you can get the swimming pool stuff too, I think.
And just use lanthanum chloride. And it's expensive. It can be. I'm lazy, which is why the skimmer idea makes the most sense to me. And also, there are issues with lanthanum that, you know, there's bounce back. If you use a lot of it, it'll drop your phosphates, but then in a couple of days they'll be back up, or they can be back up, and. Big changes to phosphates are not good.
Right.
Animals have often, sometimes, once in a while, have adverse reactions to those changes. In my tank, very high phosphate traditionally. Here's a way that I could lower it so it's automatically dosed right into my skimmer where it's exported after it binds.
Why do you think you get high phosphate?
Why? Because I pour like a gallon of food into my tank.
Ah,
yeah,
maybe that's the problem.
Oh, because I got a lot of corals and animals that need to eat.
Okay.
I gotta feed the animals.
So lanthanum chloride.
So lanthanum chloride
is this thing used for phosphates, and somebody has made the claim that it cures ick.
Yeah. So they were dosing it.
This is on Reef to Reef. If somebody wants to search for it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's on Reef to Reef, and
Be nice. We're
it's nothing.
Not
bad.
You. No. I'm talking to the audience. Be nice if you go out and read this.
No.
We're in a new Reef to Reef world where you should be nice.
What struck me, just because Reef to Reef wants everyone to be nice,
right.
I have to applaud them for that.
Yes.
Because
they listen to the podcast.
Boy, people get dicky. And
they listen to the podcast. Remember? We talked about
that. Did we talk about it? Well, it was also.
I just want to take credit for it.
I'll give you the credit for it.
Us?
No, just you.
Oh, okay.
Just you. So it brings home the point that the critical thinking skills are cyclical, right? So it's the exact same reasoning that people used for ginger to cure ick is now being used as lanthanum cures ick.
Okay.
Which is basically, I had ick and I put in the lanthanum and now the ick is gone.
Right.
Right. So there was something else to this story. There was another chunk to it besides just the lanthanum.
Which,
I don't remember,
follow up what Rich is saying is you could pretty much, throw doggy doo doo for a Boogie Nights reference.
Doggy doo doo.
You could throw that into your aquarium and then claim it kills ick because of the life cycle of ick, which fools you into thinking you've cured ick, right?
Correct. So the spots that we see for ick are going to go away after 3 to 7 days.
What the time is, but
the trophons just drop off.
The trophons are the little things that look white that burrow into the gills, right? And then under the skin and hang on. And then the next part of their life cycle is a drop off to go down into the substrate, right? Live the next part of their life cycle there, right?
Yep.
And then they become free swimming again and go find a host, or how does that work? Because I can't remember myself.
Yeah, they swim around and find another host.
Right. Okay.
I'm half listening, so I hope that's correct.
Probably not. he's surfing on Reef to Reef.
I'm
right
just
now.
Making sure there was some other. Oh, this is a different thread.
This is your topic, buddy.
This is a different thread. So my reaction to that is there's no way. that.
So was there one person defending this, or was there a group of people?
One guy said it, and he also had linked to a published, a peer-reviewed paper that lanthanum chloride has been used in fighting cancer.
Okay.
Right. No. Right. So, but the main thing to know is that the fallacy post hoc ergo propter hoc, it happened after, therefore was caused by.
Correct.
Is incredibly, incredibly powerful. It is very seductive. It's also very useful, because it does answer a lot of questions in our life.
Mm-hmm.
But it's often very wrong, which is why it's called a fallacy, and it's got its own name. It's very easy to fall into the trap that my ick went away and I did because I did this.
Right.
I would be very surprised if lanthanum has any effect on the disease, on the parasite at all.
Well, isn't it one of these things that all you have to do is wait a little longer, and then usually what the person will say is...
Oh, go ahead. Let me finish your scenario before I tell usually, you you're wrong.
Well, I'm just saying, usually what will happen in these things where somebody's trying to defend is like... Oh, yeah, well, I introduced another fish. Or, oh, I didn't quite get it right this time. There's usually some other reason why the ick has returned, or the thing that was cured or caused by.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't follow your line of logic, and so you come up with now yet another...
Yet a new one. Yeah. So he also was saying that it... he does say, but maybe not sure, I need help to confirm it. The fish also, they were in quarantine, had lymphocystis as well.
Okay.
And then it turns out they were in quarantine for 10 days.
Is that stuff that's on the top of the fins?
It's like the cottony-looking stuff.
Yeah.
So that goes away, too. So
right.
So he's got the two that resolve right. on their own.
Right. Well, kind of resolve, but so, one of them, but yes.
Yeah, well, no, they can both resolve, right? Sometimes ick does resolve.
Okay.
Sometimes lymph, you know, when you have ick, you can have a bout of spots and not see a bout of spots again ever.
Because it, for whatever reason, it doesn't finish its life
cycle. So either it's become subclinical.
What does that mean, Rich?
You don't see it.
Okay.
It's at such a low level that it's not making a difference. It's not showing up. It's not
right.
It's not.
This is the kind of
going
the
crazy.
This is also kind of the thing, and this is again the Terrence Pedestrian way of explaining it is, I get some sort of a resistance from my fish to ick in my tank, kind of a thing.
Maybe it's been shown that fish can develop a resistance to it, but to say that because it's post hoc.
Sure.
Again, right there.
Right, no doubt.
No. So, yeah, the ick, I haven't seen ick, so my fish must have a resistance to it. Actually, that's not even post hoc. That's just making something up.
well, thank you. Welcome to the Scamate podcast with Terrence, who makes stuff up, and Rich, who's the smart science guy.
Yeah, that's pretty much true. That's right. Why people listen. I can't feel bad that, you know... That this is going to keep happening because it's going to keep happening because the fallacy is so seductive and so everywhere.
Right.
But what was nice to me about this discussion, at least, was that it wasn't, by the time I had gotten to it, and I got to it early today for whatever reason, I saw the, you know, early in the thread, but there had already been one or two people who went, yeah, I don't think so.
So Rich's job is done.
So my self job, I don't want to do that job. I'm so thrilled.
No, what I mean is...
In the aquarium world right now, I come onto forums and I look at other people.
The job that you did years ago is what I'm saying. You is complete. He now has rich skeptical minions out there.
Oh God!
Who are
don't say it like that. That sounds terrible.
Who are out there to do the job of their master?
I'm an idiot, right? I should have minions out there making me money. It's not just doing
not
critical
the
thinking.
The anti-ick minions.
I also think that in the hobby, you know, that's nice of you to say. I don't think it was really me. I think it's that the way the hobby has grown, that there are just more people are more vocal about this kind of stuff now than they used to be.
There
are more people who have been around long enough to have
good
thoughts about it.
I agree with you there, but I will give you credit for really sparking this off in a way, I think, that allowed people to understand it and to follow along with it and not to shrink away when people would challenge you as well and say, no, I have this thing. I'm telling you, microbubbles work or nano bubbles work or pico bubbles work or whatever, and you didn't shrink away, you're like, do they really?
Do they really?
Let's you know, think. When a yeah. lot of people would shrink away, and that gives people, you know, I think the understanding of how to have a healthy discussion, argument, whatever you want to call it, about a topic, and be a little skeptical and go into things and ask better questions.
That's very kind of you to say. Thank you. That's I couldn't hope for for anything better than that. That's a wonderful thing.
I earnestly say I'm one of those people, and reading some of the stuff early on, you know, that you wrote on these kinds of things, and I'd look at things in a different way. And so I do think that there is a little army out there who are seeing this and are more skeptical. I don't think that the world can have now an aqua equalizer.
Yeah, it's not going to come out in the same way.
It will not happen anymore.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not saying lanthanum doesn't cure ick and lymphocytosis and velvet. I'm squinting a whole lot at it. That certainly needs extraordinary evidence.
Well, and, you know, hey, who would have thought a yeast infection, you know, medicine kills bryopsis?
Right. God, that's so seductive, right? It's such a seductive thing to say that way, right? We clock all the successes so well, and we don't clock the 50,000 failures for the one success, right?
Right, right, sure.
So yeah. it's so if I just keep throwing stuff at this, something's gonna have an effect. It's so interesting.
Yeah,
it's
and,
so
and cool. You're never gonna go, yeah, the idiot tried doing this, you know, 50,000 times, right?
Right, right. It's fascinating stuff. So I was happy to see the thread. I was sad that I have this thing where it seemed. I've been saying it feels like every 5 to 8 years, all the information that we've said has to be re-said, you know, because people don't go back and look. And I guess sometimes it's good to have, you know, a new voice saying the same thing that was said before. You know, herbivore articles, it makes sense for somebody to say that.
But it's so young. I mean, this whole hobby, the whole, I know.
But it happens everywhere. That's how everything is.
Okay, that's a different thing to say. I'm speaking specifically about this hobby. It's, you know, to say anything, well, every 8 years, it's like, you know what? I mean, people really haven't been keeping SPS tanks. I mean, really keeping SPS tanks for more than 12 years, in my opinion. I know there's guys that were doing it and created brown sticks that kind of grew and other things. But, I mean, this kind of stuff right here behind you.
No, that's...
No.
Yeah. So... Yeah, you know, so it's cool, and I was thrilled that a bunch of people said, I don't think, you know, they were asking for one of the, there's a guy, Humblefish, who does a lot of good disease work, and so let's see what he says, and he said, there's nothing in some of the literature, you feel free to experiment, you'll be starting from ground zero. It's like, great, you know, and then people pull other papers.
I know.
And it's like,
Google.
Which is great. I'm very glad people are doing that. Right. The next step to that is reading the paper and being able to make a decision of, is what that paper say applicable to what we're trying to press it into? Probably not. I would imagine that the cancer treatment, I didn't read the papers, I would imagine that the cancer treatment is affecting the cancer at a very different level than it would be impacting cryptocurrency, but maybe not. You know, maybe not. That's the thing. The people with skeptics, is all they hear is you saying no, but you're really going, you got to convince me more. Yeah, yeah. Got to convince me more.
For sure.
Yeah. So the lanthanum cures ick? Probably not. 99.2% sure that it doesn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
The 0.2.
The 0.2.
Okay.
Well, usually, if I'm really, really sure, it's 0.9.
Okay.
So I'll give it 0.2.
All right.
Give it a bigger
tune in tomorrow. One of the things I will say about the, you know, these forum threads and whatnot is that's another way that people should be giving us feedback, because I'd like to see that happen, which is, hey, guys, I saw this forum thread on Reef to Reef. Could you guys, you know, comment on that?
Sure. Yeah, we could.
And what do you think? And I think that would be some interesting content, too. So if you're listening to this and you've read something on Reef to Reef and you want to get our take on it, please put it in Facebook or on Reef to Reef or wherever. Let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to just go to the last one because I think it makes the most sense. Because we've been having a lot of fires in California.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And what's come with the fires this year, because one of the main electricity suppliers has been, instead of upgrading the grid, they've been giving themselves bonuses. So they've been we've been having rolling blackouts because some of the electrical stuff that should have been upgraded causes fires and high wind. So to stop...
Don't get me started on that. Let's go right into the aquarium side of it to keep Terrence from going into
that. They're shutting off people's electricity for 6-8 days.
Yes.
So oddly enough, what sparked us to talk about this was a house fire.
You said sparked.
I did. And I didn't even mean it as a terrible, terrible pun. puns are not jokes. You're really
laughing. I'm laughing like silently because I was like, I get oxygen. It's funny because Rich doesn't like that kind of humor.
And I do them sometimes, but I don't clock them until after they have. Same with a lot of innuendo. I will get in trouble for innuendo, and I'm just talking. I'm not trying to be. I mean, like when I talk about
nature.
Andy Griffith.
It's somebody they know the nature. I
doing
know.
Stuff.
I know.
That's in purpose. But this was a guy in Milpitas. There was actually a fire, residential fire or a building fire.
Okay.
And about 3,000, 4,000 people lost power because of that.
Okay.
And he turned on his generator, and then the police came by and told him to turn off your generator because it's too loud.
Oh, my goodness.
It was, and that's interesting, too, because everyone's like, oh, you know, forget it. If they've turned off your power because of fires, I tell them to screw off. And it's like, no, this is a different reason, and the whole area didn't lose power. And all these people do have to go to work tomorrow, and your loud generator out in the courtyard of the condo, I could see being really horrible for people in that situation.
Oh, it was in a condo?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, there's a piece of information I didn't know because I did kind of read this, but I must have missed that part.
So it's all right, you know. And it was a loud generator. It wasn't one of the quieter ones.
Oh, okay.
So, but anyway, that's a whole lot of blah, blah.
Right.
The point is emergency preparedness pretty much. What are you going to do? So we were going to talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. This is one of these areas where I am kind of the... cobbler whose children have no shoes, embarrassingly so. I can give all sorts of advice of what I should be doing myself and that I am not doing. Yeah. And every time I talk about this particular type of subject, it does embarrass me a little bit.
You do what I say, not as I do?
Exactly.
Because you have no feet.
Yes. Yes.
You are footless.
So, you know, I think the most important thing for the animals is that they can breathe, right? I mean, getting the circulation and having water air exchange in the tank is super important. Being able to provide that to them, again, assuming that there isn't a temperature, you know, a major temperature issue, should not be that difficult for most people to do without even having a generator. You really can do it with even a small power head that you already have, and a battery. I mean, literally a battery, an inverter, and one little pump can get you to circulate the water in the main display of your tank. And on top of that, most power outages in the country, maybe excepting, say, Florida, and the once every 20 years here when we have a big earthquake, they're like 2 to 6 hours. They're not 2 to 4 days. And so a lot of people constantly think about this idea of how am I going to keep my tank alive for 2 days? What you really need to worry about is how can I just keep my tank alive for 2 to 4 hours?
Yeah, and I think it behooves us to even come back one click in generalities. If you lose power, what matters? That's the way I like to think about it. So the first thing that matters is circulation, right? Because circulation and respiration are all tied together.
Exactly.
So you got to keep the water moving. So yeah, there's a million ways you could do that. There's a whole lot of great air pumps that automatically come on if they sense a power outage.
Battery powered ones.
Use batteries.
Mm-hmm.
So those are great.
Yes, they are.
And now there are some cobalt makes one.
I have none of them.
I have a bunch of them in boxes.
All transparency
in
boxes. Honesty,
I haven't. I still have my Penplax ones set up, but I need to convert over to these cobalt ones. And I like the cobalt ones because they run on any power block.
Oh, like a USB.
Yeah. So they come with their own battery.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's charged up and that lasts however
that's
long.
That's very clever.
But then we've all got old power bricks, because
a ton of them.
The bigger one now.
Yes, of course.
So if you're in a problem, you can have extra power, or you can charge your power brick. So that's air pump. Air is the cheapest, easiest, most efficient way to get some circulation mm-hmm. in and keep your oxygen up. There's a lot of pumps, a lot of in-tank water pumps that have battery backups now that you can get.
Yes.
And that's a great way to do it. And then people, you know, things you, then my brain goes to, what do you not have to think about? Light? Do you not have to think about light?
This is a really good point that you're making right now, which I often hear people, again, going back to people wanting to have the 2 to 4 day thing and wanting to run their tank, right?
Right.
They're basically thinking about it just like that. Like, okay, I got to keep my tank running the way it is, because they don't necessarily understand, like you just said, what can't I just forego, and then everything will be fine for even 2 days.
Yeah. I wouldn't worry about light for 5 days.
Right.
Probably 7 days.
Yeah, ambient
light. At 5 days, I'd start going, oh, bad thing. Yeah. But if I don't have power for 5 days, I'll guarantee you there are other things
yes.
more pressing than my aquarium.
Absolutely.
Like my puppies. And watching Andy Griffith reruns. Never going to lose that. Why am I looking at your tank? I'm trying to see what else matters. So heat does matter. Heat can actually
yes.
Drop more than you would like it to. It depending on the size of your tank.
But house is going to stay warm.
Well, that's the thing. If you're in an overnight power outage, which is what I think you do need to think about heat somewhat. But that doesn't mean you need to power a heater.
No.
Right.
Yes.
Right. So if your power goes off, you throw blankets around your tank. That's not a stupid thing to do.
No. Absolutely not. But also to let people know too that if you keep your tank at 78 degrees, right, you don't have to worry about your tank going to 74 degrees.
Correct. This guy's got down to 70 or 72.
Yeah.
Which is it's a little. But then, you know, somebody said, oh, well, when you have power when you turn your generator on, only heat it to 75. Mm. Do not heat it to 78, because then the swing is going to be much more. So that's good smartness there.
Yeah, I don't think the animals, I've had numerous tanks in my garage or in spaces that get cooler and have had issues.
Yeah.
and did not have any kind of adverse effect for short-term situations like this. You know, even the corals, like, oh, gee, it's 70 degrees. Corals are going to be like, oh, this sucks, you know. But, you know, 6 hours later, it's creeping up 72, 74, 76.
You're okay.
Everything's good.
Yeah. So, you know, what else can you do to heat a tank? You can...
If shit dies, get it out.
Get it out. you can't microwave water. You could boil water on the stove.
Yeah, for sure.
You could boil salt water on the stove and just mix it into your tank.
That's a good idea. I've never even thought about that, but that's a really good idea.
It'd be labor intensive, but
yes.
You could do it. What else do you really care about? You know, anywhere that there's a lot of life, you want to make sure there's circulation. So if you have a refugium, you want some air moving through there.
If it's going to be a long time. Again, I think it's one of these things where with these things... You know, obviously you have other things in life that are also going to be pressing at the same time. But still, if you're like, okay, the power went out, I need to take care of my refugium. No, it's like an hour and a half goes by, 2 hours go by, your power's not back on. You're like, okay, well now the tank is good. I can start worrying about the other stuff.
Yeah, yes. And now as we're talking about this, I'm thinking, you know, there's plenty of articles out there about what you need to do. You know, to be completely prepared, or whatever level you want to be prepared at. What I'm thinking about now from what you and I are talking about is the time to be deciding what to do in a power outage is not when the power outage happens.
Oh, yes.
It's beforehand. So
it's like earthquake preparedness in general,
yeah.
Right? It's just as an example with the fires. Perfect example in just regular life. When I saw these fires going on again this time, I told Nancy, my wife, I said, okay, here's the deal. We live up in hills. I've got nothing but oak trees in my backyard here, feet from the house. If somebody gets that hillside on fire, it's literally minutes before we have to be out of this house, right? I said, so you have that cupboard over there that has your family photos in it. and you've got everything that's important to us is in the safe. You go grab two totes from wherever, dump whatever's in the, you know, in them out, put that stuff in.
And we're gone.
Take the stuff from the safe, put it in there. Well, I'm even more worried when I'm not here. I'm not traveling or something. I take everything from the safe, put it in there, put it in the truck, and you're out of here.
Yeah.
And everything else is replaceable. And that, and think about that now. So this is the same thing with your tank. It's like, okay, if my refugium completely dies off, that's great. I'll drain the whole thing, dump it out or whatever later on. That's okay.
See, and I would, as I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking the smartest thing to do is to get a bunch of those air pumps we just talked about. They're not that expensive, like
right.
$20 or $30. If you got a one, if you got a refugium, that's over your refugium, and you know, two or three in your big tank,
sure,
and one in your sump. And then if there's a power
sponsored by Cobalt,
if there's you owe me less. If there's a problem, then 90% about what you're worried about is you are not worrying about it now.
Especially short term, yes.
Yeah. And for that amount of money, for $100, you could have that peace of mind. Yeah, I think everyone with a tank
Amazon
just
affiliate
do it.
Link in the description for the podcast.
Yeah, we get a little jingle every time you buy from Amazon through us. We should probably set that up.
We should.
Amazon, sponsor of the Skimmate podcast. Skimmate.
Skimmate. Yeah.
I'd like a vanilla Skimmate. Oh, we're coming into peppermint Skimmate season. I'll be very excited about that. So I guess we don't have to talk about that anymore.
Okay.
I'm going to say, get a bunch of those pumps. I'll probably set mine up tomorrow morning. And then anything else, you're going to have to do something. I guess the other thing you could do is get a whole house generator on an automatic transfer switch. That's great. That's expensive. Go for it.
And if you do that, depending on which devices, you will want to have something like a UPS on there so that the transfer doesn't really have a big shock of the power over. Because even with an automatic transfer switch, you have...
there's a lag.
Yeah, John Halsey actually on the Control Freak Wednesday last week showed his stuff off. And was talking about
that. I got to look at that then.
He showed his generators, his natural gas generator, and the fact that, yeah, there's a transfer switch where there's 45 seconds, and all your gear doesn't generally like to be hammered, you know.
Yeah, off
like
and on,
that.
Right, because you want it to wait 45 seconds so you know it's a real power outage, not just a blip.
Exactly, and so your UPS, which can't keep your tank online for more than 10 minutes, right, is fine. It just holds on that power for you until the generator comes on and then everything's good to go.
So you have, like, your return pumps on a UPS?
Whatever you think that critical stuff is, and you're like, if you have an Apex, you would do that on there, right, because you don't want that getting hammered. It's sensitive electronics.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to worry about, you know, some of those sensitive pieces of equipment.
Yeah, very cool. So, be prepared.
There you go.
We're freaking Boy Scouts.
Oh, man. Something like that.
Freaking Boy Scouts. What else you got? Oh, I want to end with stuff we love.
Okay.
Right? Because I think there's so much hate.
Oh, well, I saw the banner on Reef to Reef, you know, so.
Oh, does it say
and
we must love
close
now?
It. You didn't even, yours isn't even, you never hit the X, so you're still scrolling past it every time.
You can get rid of that?
Yes. I was looking over there while you were scrolling. Up in the upper right corner is a little X.
Oh, look. Oh.
I wish you would have read it to people a little bit beforehand.
I thought
just
they were
find
being
a good nugget.
I actually like that. So
I do too.
Reef to Reef, we'll make that the thing I love.
I love that too. Can we just both have the same thing we love?
No, you can't
I gotta
steal
come
my
up with
love.
Something.
They put a plea out for people to be kind and give people the most generous interpretations. And if they're feeling heated, walk away. You don't need to post. We don't need to fight with each other in the reefing world. We need to help each other. So if you're feeling aggro, go somewhere else.
Yeah, you don't need to be a one-upper on the aggro side.
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to on most of this stuff.
Yeah. Press like. You can like posts now instead of going, yeah, just
or,
like the post
or,
you like.
Or you basically go, ignore.
Yeah.
Well,
you know me so well.
What things do I love? I'll tell you what.
One thing.
This thing right here. I do. I love it.
Okay. I was looking for more hobby stuff, but
if
you
want
to talk about the board that allows us to do that.
Well, it's not that part that I love. I'm
know,
a geek at heart. You know that? We both like our gadgets and stuff.
Do 15 seconds on the board, and then we need a reef thing from you. That's something in the reef world that you love.
Anyway, it's this Rodecaster Pro that allows us to do these podcasts. And the reason I love it is because I get to take the podcast off of here, put it into my computer, and publish it out to you guys in such a short amount of time with no post that we actually can provide this, you know, out to people. And yeah. that's why I love it. Because I don't think if I had to spend, you know, an hour on every one of these podcasts, it would not happen.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't have this podcast.
Yeah. So we don't currently, you get pure undiluted Schemate.
Pretty much. Yeah. I don't edit anything
Which
out
I love
in between.
I think that's right. I want this podcast to be...
I clip the run-up a little bit, and I clip the tail end maybe a little bit, and that's
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah, because our run-ups can be ridiculous.
Yes.
But it's just us. We're not trying to be Flash. We're just trying to be two guys talking, Reeve. What do you love?
What do I love? I might be a little schmarmy here on this one for you. I'm serious. I love that my wife actually loves the aquarium and
That's
allows
great.
Me to do things with this and like extend the passion. And she's on board, and I bring home a box of fish or something, and it's not like, oh God, what did you get now? You know, it's nothing like that. It's yeah. always like, oh, what did you bring? What beautiful thing coming now? And oh, look at them swim through there. And you know, and if something dies, she's heartbroken.
Yeah.
You know about it. And you know, being able to share something like that you love with somebody is just, it's really great.
That's really great. Because it does, when I see the things about, you know, how do you hide this from your wife?
I know.
It breaks my heart.
I know.
I want to go, oh, you get a new wife.
Yeah.
But you can't say that without being a huge asshole.
It just, to me, it just, I actually get a smile sometimes when I read those because it's like, and I brag about it probably too much. You know, when we moved into this, or before we moved into this house, when we walked in, before we bought it, Nancy was like, that's where the tank's going to
go.
Yeah,
that's great.
And I'm like, you realize we had a 210, and if I put a 210 there, it's going to look like a nano on this big wall with these high ceilings. She's like, well, then you need to get a bigger tank.
Yeah, that's great.
So that's what I love.
That's why I'm taking her. All right, that's the Schemate housekeeping
Stop
stuff.
Stop saying it. I'm not on board with that.
That's all right. I would imagine that a good percentage of our audience wants me to piss you off. So I'm going to keep saying Schemate.
So I guess you guys are going to have to give the feedback to let us know whether or not...
Do you want me to poke at Terrence?
You want this to happen, and maybe we'll get an N of what? A few hundred?
100,000.
100,000,
This
yeah.
is going to buy me a new house, this
oh my
podcast.
Goodness.
This is the whole goal.
We better get some sponsors soon then.
So help us, help buy me a new house. If you like the podcast, share it around. Tell people you like it. Ask us questions, all that social
help,
media
help
crap.
Rich get out of the hood.
We hate saying that, but we talked about it out of the hood of Alameda. We talked about it last time. I don't really like talking about this stuff, but knowing if people are listening or what they like or what they don't like, it helps us not only guide where this is going, but you
yes.
know, if this is useless to everybody, we'll stop doing it. We'll do
yeah.
something else. We enjoy doing it, but we could do it. We could enjoy doing it.
We enjoy hearing about people enjoying us doing it.
We could enjoy it just by having dinner instead of actually doing the work, but which we don't mind doing. But if you like it, let us know. It helps us know what to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right, well, until next time, Rich, you know, and I think I'll be at your place.
Yeah, or we could do one of the secret things that we talked about.
Yeah, we should secret go someplace
spot,
else.
Or we could do, you got a bunch of things we could
we
do
should.
Instead.
Maybe we'll check with Neptune Aquatics or Aquatic Collection or one of those guys.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll go to one of those stores.
Yeah, we just have to not go the day before. We should record podcast tomorrow.
Yeah, we might need to plan a little. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Not that, not planning. All right, guys, till next time. The Schemate Podcast.
Schemate.
Ugh.